Thanks, Rich. There was a clearance sale at Pastors R Us. Rich and I got the last two shirts that were available. Ryan got in there just before us. They were the last two left because nobody else wanted them. That's why it goes. You have to excuse me. I've actually spent most of the week in bed. So the one thing that has got me panicked this morning is that I erupt into a coughing fit in the middle of a sermon. It might happen, so you would just have to excuse me if that does take place. I'm okay. I'm just coughing. Other than a cough, I'm 100% fine. Well, other than a cough, I'm okay. Let's put it that way. And I've got a memory of when I was a kid, and I went to the shops with my mom, and I said to her, "Mom, can you buy me one of those race cars as a toy?" And she said, "What race cars, my boy?" I said, "You know, one of those race cars, I promise you I'm fine. One of those race cars from the Grand Prix." And so she laughed at me like that. I wasn't quite sure why she was laughing. And she said, no, my boy, it's actually pronounced Grand Prix. So I said, oh, okay. And to be honest, I left that conversation thinking to myself, how do you know? How do you know when you're supposed to put an accent on the word or when you're supposed to just read it plain, right? As a kid learning to read, it's quite confusing. And Paul writes this to the Corinthian church. Just want to find my scripture. He writes this to the Corinthian church in 1 Corinthians chapter 9, verse 27. He says this, "But I buffet my body and I subdue it." And the word that he writes here is pronounced buffet. And it's what happens when waves buffet a coastline. And so as waves begin to hit that coastline, they shape what that coastline looks like. So a coast is shaped by how the waves and the wind hit it, and it begins to take form because of what's been buffeting it, right? But because so many of us are conditioned to read things with accents, we read this as I buffet my body. I eat all I want for a set price. All I can eat. And some of the other translations that Paul writes actually says, I discipline my body. I beat my body into submission. I submit my body to hardship. And so buffet is actually the opposite of what Paul is saying here. Paul is saying, I make my body my servant. I make sure that I don't serve my body. I make sure that my body knows I'm not its servant. It is my servant. Today I'm speaking about fasting. As Rich and Jax were saying in the announcement, we are fasting together at the end of the month. And so don't panic, it's not the end of the month yet. But we just want to teach on it because we would like to help our understanding so that when the fasting comes, you're not thinking to yourself, it's not for me. This morning I want to invite you to fast with us because it is worth it. I want to invite you into fast with us at the end of the month. So I want to start off with why we fast, move on to how we fast, and then a couple of the outcomes of fasting. What happens when we fast? So I want to start with the big questions first. Why the heck would anybody voluntarily fast? Like, if you speak to, like, my kids are all big eaters. They're at school, they play a lot of sports, and they eat sort of 10, 15 sandwiches at a time, right? We go through a bucket of peanut butter a week. There's a lot of food being consumed. If you say to one of those guys, we're not going to eat for 3 days. Are we short of money? No, we've decided voluntarily not to eat for 3 days. Right? That's quite a hard sell if you don't understand. So why would we ever decide to fast? So before I get into the reasons of fasting, I want to ask us an overarching question. And we've been asking ourselves this question for the last 12 months. Who am I becoming by the things that I'm doing? So we all need to settle this question for ourselves. Who are you becoming by the things that you are doing? See, your life is headed in a direction, but for so many people, the spiritual direction that our life is headed in is undefined. It's an undefined outcome, and it's an undefined direction. We just meander through our spiritual life without much thought of who we are becoming. So who I'm becoming is everything to do with the things that I do. And when I say the things that I do, I mean the things that you think about, the things that you read, you watch, the things that you listen to, the things that you speak, and the things that you physically do. all of that together, when you put all of that together, that determines the direction that your life is headed in. Who, by all of those things combined, who are you becoming? That is the process of your life. When you put it together, what direction is your spiritual life headed in? Is it defined? Is it undefined? So I'm not asking myself when I'm wanting to do something, when I'm wanting to read something or listen to something or whatever, I'm not asking myself, is this good or is this bad? I'm not asking myself, is this wrong or is this right? I'm asking myself, who is this helping me to become? Because that takes the decision away from a decision in the moment. It takes a long-term view on it. Because I realize that everything that I do contributes to the man that I'm becoming. Not only the physical man that I'm becoming, but the spiritual man that I'm becoming. Because I want to become a better physical man, but far more importantly, I want to become a better and more healthy spiritual man. See, we all love events, but we don't love processes. We love making a baby, but 9 months pregnancy, not so much. Right? We love the event, not the process. It's okay to giggle in church at those things. It's all right. So we want a breakthrough event. But transformation, the person that you're becoming, is not an event, it's a process. It's not something that you can build by upping the amount of events that you have. So if you're wanting to become a better spiritual person, a better spiritual being, you can't just have more events. Right? Don't come to 2 services on a Sunday and then perhaps a midweek meeting as well at another church. That's not going to make you a better person. More events is not going to change that. Because it's not your spiritual process of becoming something is not an event. It's a process. So we'll come back to the person that I'm becoming a little bit later when we look at some of the outcomes. But let's settle, first of all, why we should fast. So a couple of reasons. First of all, it humbles me. Fasting is a biblical way to humble yourself. Psalm 35 says this in verse 13. David says, I humbled myself with fasting. So we all know that pride is a sin. But pride is, it's a tricky sin because it's a little bit like bad breath. It's very hard to tell when you have it. Until a couple of years ago when we all had to wear face masks, right? And then everybody was very aware of their own bad breath. But pride is like that. It's quite easy to spot in somebody else, very tricky to spot in yourself. That's what bad breath is, all right? Jesus says, actually, you shouldn't go around pointing it out in everybody else. So if nobody else is pointing it out in me, if I'm not pointing it out in everybody else, and it's tricky to diagnose in myself, how do I know that I'm proudful? 2 ways. First of all, you can speak to somebody who's trusted in your life. Secondly, you can make sure that you keep humbling yourself. Because if I'm constantly humbling myself, it's quite hard to be proud. Fasting is a way that I can humble myself. Quietly fasting. You know, I don't need to go pointing out to everybody just how humble I really am. Why should we fast? Secondly, fasting starves my flesh and it feeds my spirit. So I don't think it's a random coincidence that 2 of the great scriptures on temptation, Adam and Eve in the garden and Jesus in the wilderness, when they are both tempted, both of those instances are related to food. Adam and Eve and Jesus are both related to food. I don't think it's a coincidence. We know that we need, as humans, food to survive. We know that we were created to enjoy life and all of creation. As humans, we are prone to self-indulgence. We are prone to giving ourselves anything and everything that we want. We're prone to buffeting, to simply having things because we want it and it makes us feel good to get it. Why is addiction so prevalent? Why is addiction so widespread? Because we think that we want to give ourselves what we want when we want it, because we think that having that thing will lead us to happiness. That's why addiction is so widespread. When what fasting does is it denies us self-indulgence and it denies us pleasure through food. And I've realized that when I fast, I don't only eat because I need to eat. Actually, very often I eat because I just like eating. And I love food. Fasting reminds my body that it's my servant and I'm not its servant. Jesus says in Matthew chapter 5, blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. So what fasting does is it brings the things that we truly hunger for into sharper focus. If you have fasted before, you'll notice that when you're fasting, you suddenly become hyper aware of everything, of food, people that are eating food around you. So you can be sitting in an office of 50 people and you can suddenly go, somebody's opened a packet of biltong, three offices across. I haven't eaten for 2 days and I can smell biltong packet being opened two offices across. Coffee is being brewed downstairs. I can smell it. I can smell the coffee. What fasting does is it brings into sharper focus the thing that you desire most. Jesus says, blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be satisfied. As I fast, what I do is I buffet my body. I beat my body into submission and I buffet my spirit. I feed my spirit. I deny my flesh and feed my spirit. And so I become hungrier for the things of God. So in the world, the more that I eat of something, the less hungry I become. But the kingdom of God works opposite to that. In the kingdom of God, the more I eat of something, the hungrier I become for it. So what you will find is the more you deny yourself, you will become hungrier to deny yourself. You won't be satisfied with just denying yourself food. You will look for other things to deny yourself to, because the more you eat of something in the kingdom, the more you want to eat it, the hungrier you become for it. Unfortunately, most of us are in the habit of denying ourselves the stuff that feeds our souls. And we feed ourselves all the stuff that leaves us spiritually malnourished. We deny ourselves the wrong things. It's the spiritual equivalent of saying, I'm going to deny myself that vegetable and I'll feed myself this ice cream. It's the spiritual equivalent of that. And what happens is when we do that, we end up unhealthy. It costs us our health. It costs us our energy and it costs us our fitness. And friends, the same thing happens to our spirits. When we don't deny ourselves, we end up spiritually unfit and unhealthy. No energy, no health, no fitness spiritually. And fasting exposes how we try to gain a sense of well-being through comfort. We sometimes call this self-medication. Did you know that the number one way that Christians self-medicate is with food? So we convince ourselves that we're better than some people who self-medicate with medication and alcohol and pornography and substance abuse. We're not like them. We're better than them. But the number one way that Christians self-medicate is with food. It's no better. If you want to understand what's actually controlling you, try cutting it off and denying yourself for a time. See, Jesus says, ask for anything in my name and it will be given to you. But before he says that, he says, deny yourself, pick up your cross and follow me. Before he says, ask of anything, he says, deny yourself. Ask of anything is preceded by deny yourself, because the more you begin to deny yourself, the more you want to do it. And so what happens is that your desires begin to change. And as your desires begin to change, you begin to ask for the right stuff. So if you have not denied yourself, you can't ask for anything because you're asking for the wrong stuff. As you deny yourself, as you follow the progress of Jesus' teaching, you begin to deny yourself. The more you deny yourself, the more you want to do it. The more you want to do it, so what you desire begins to change. And then when you ask, you're asking for the right things. So Jesus says, then, after you've denied yourself, ask for anything in my name, and you will receive it. Why should we fast? Thirdly, or the next number, it amplifies our prayers. Does God listen to us when we're not fasting? Absolutely. Does fasting give God no option but to listen to us? Absolutely not. See, fasting doesn't twist God's arm. 2 Samuel chapter 12 is a story of David, who was the king of Israel, and one of his sons falls quite gravely ill. And David starts fasting, and he fasts for days and days and days and days. And after all that fasting for days and days, his son dies. And so what David does is he receives news of his son's death, and then he says, okay, he gets up, he washes himself, he has something to eat, and then he goes to the temple and worships God. See, fasting doesn't twist God's arm, but what it does do is it reveals our true motives. It reveals our motives for praying. So if it reveals our motives for fasting. If you are fasting to try and convince God to give you something that you want, it's not the right motive. When God doesn't give David what he was trusting for, he gets up, washes himself, has something to eat, then goes and worships. David's fast formed something in him. he was becoming something through his fast, not trying to get something out of God from his fast. Fasting isn't a magical way to manipulate God. It's not a way to make God an accomplice to my plans, but it does amplify my prayers. Mark chapter 9, there's a story of a man who's possessed by a demon, and Jesus' disciples try and cast out the demon, but they can't. And so Jesus comes, and he prays for the man, he rebukes the demon, and the demon leaves. And after that, Jesus' disciples come to him and say, why couldn't we cast that demon out? And he answers them in verse 28, and he says, after Jesus had gone indoors, his disciples asked him, why couldn't we drive it out? And he says, Jesus replied, this kind can only come out by prayer and fasting. So Jesus is not recorded to have fasted very often, but it's clear that he saw value in it. Jesus says that fasting is a private activity meant to spiritually commune with God, and it's not to win spiritual brownie points, A, with God, or B, with the people around you. It's not to make you look more spiritual. In fact, he goes further in Matthew chapter 6, in verse 18, Jesus says this, when you fast, don't look gloomy like the hypocrites, for they disfigure their faces that their fasting may be seen by others. Truly I say to you, they've received their reward in full. But when you fast, anoint your head and wash your face, that your fasting may not be seen by others, but by your Father who is in secret. Then he says this, one of the best and most frightening scriptures. And your Father who sees what is done in secret will reward you. Don't look as if you're suffering when you're fasting so that everybody can see how spiritual you are. He says, wash yourself, anoint your head with oil, like clean yourself, put whatever makeup on that you wear. Look as if you're doing okay, because this is a private practice, and your Father who sees what is done in secret will reward you. There seems to be a direct correlation between my state of holiness and my fasting. Do you want your prayer life to carry power and authority and not just be words shouting into the wind? Jesus says, your Father who sees what is done in secret will reward you. One way to do this is through fasting with intentional habits and practices, and I'll go through that in a minute. Next thing, why do we fast? To stand in solidarity with the poor. Isaiah 58 says this, is this not the kind of fasting I've chosen? To loose the chains of injustice and untie the cords of yoke, to set the oppressed free and break every yoke? Is it not to share your food with the hungry and to provide the poor wanderer with shelter? When you see the naked, to clothe them and to not turn away from your own flesh and blood. So we said that fasting is an act of self-denial. We said it's an act of humility. But further than that, fasting is an act of empathy. It helps me to empathize with those that don't have food. Friends, if you want to have a heart for mercy and justice, if you want to have a heart for the poor, if you want to understand God's heart for the poor, fasting is one of the ways to do that. The meal or two or three, whatever it is that you miss, many people in this country live with that every day. We stand in solidarity with the poor. So that's why, that's some of the why. Let's get into a little bit really practical. How should we fast? Number one, set your time. If you've never fasted before, consider fasting one or two meals at a time and beginning with that. You can also consider fasting with the rest of us for 3 days between sunrise and sunset. Don't only fast food. Fast food. Don't only fast from food. Fast from all leisure activities. Remember we said this is to beat our bodies into submission. So everything that gives our bodies pleasure, we want to deny our bodies those things. So it's leisure media. Everything, all leisure media gives our bodies pleasure. Fast from it. It's shopping for pleasure. Fast from it. Take it out. TV, gaming, shopping. And if you've never fasted before, you can certainly start with that. Certainly, that's within everybody's realm to start with that. But I want to invite you this morning to not just do that. I want to invite you to take one step further than you've been before. If you've never fasted before, take one step further. If you have fasted before, consider fasting for longer. Consider fasting more purely. Take one step beyond your comfort zone. So if you're sitting here thinking, that's uncomfortable for me, awesome. That's what you should be doing. This is not a practice that should be comfortable for you. This is not a practice that you should be looking at thinking, yes, that's what I want. This is a practice that you should be looking at thinking, I don't want to do that. As soon as you're thinking that, that means it's the right practice for you. After you've set your time, consider going 10% further than that. So decide if you've never fasted, what you're going to do, and then consider going a little bit further than that, what you're comfortable with. But certainly don't go under it. Obviously, if you're pregnant, playing sports, taking medication, speak to a doctor before you stop eating food for a couple of days. While we're stopping food, make sure that you're drinking lots of liquids. Water is the best. Soft drinks are not good for your digestive system. And caffeinated drinks, energy drinks, tea, coffee, they stimulate your nervous system. So what you don't want is your digestive system through sugars and your nervous system through caffeine to be fully operating while there's no food in your system, right? That's not going to be good for you. Drink lots of water. Remember, you are 75% water. Just keep topping yourself up. The more you can drink, the better. Drink lots and lots of water, and drink, I would say, water only. But always, some people do drink coffee. I think, first of all, it's bad from your nervous system point of view, but I also think that coffee is a bit of an indulgence, right? The reason I drink coffee is because it's the nectar of the gods. It's an indulgence for me, right? So if it's an indulgence, if it's something that I love, that's the thing that I should be giving up. That's a good idea. The day before the fast, only eat light meals. Don't go to eat all you can eat buffet the night before the fast and then hope that tomorrow I'll be okay. You're not going to feel kiff, I can promise you that. If you've swelled your stomach the night before, the next day you're going to be suffering. You drink 4 cups of coffee the day before, the next day you're going to have proper headaches, right? The day or so before, just start eating light meals, start cutting back on caffeine, cutting back on refined sugar, so that during the fast, you will get headaches, you will get a couple of body cramps and pains. That's part of the normal process, but you want to minimize it on your first day or two. Minimize it from the day before. Start cutting back a little bit. And just general public health announcement, make sure that you brush your teeth. At least 3 times a day, right? When we're eating, food washes the plaque off our teeth and out of our mouths so that our breath smells less, right? You're now not eating food, you're just drinking water. Just general public health and safety. Just brush your teeth. Especially if you work in a communal office. How do we fast? Go deep. During your fast, set aside specific and significant time to worship and seek God in prayer. Plan ahead so that your time is unhurried. We will put together a guided fast. We want to help you in this process. We're going to send that out on our church app. We'll send that out in our WhatsApp community. If you don't have the church app, you're not part of the WhatsApp community, come and speak to somebody at the hospitality desk afterwards. If you don't have access to either of those things for whatever reason, we will make sure that we can get that into your hands, because we want this not just to be an abstinence. We don't just want you to stop eating for 3 days. We want this to be a deeply spiritual time for you. Guided fast is simple and achievable. 15 minutes in the morning, between 5 and 15 minutes at lunch, 15 minutes of the evening. And the beautiful thing is that we've taken out the excuse of, I don't have time to do that, because you're not eating. So the 15 minutes that you would have had breakfast, 5 to 15 minutes at lunch, 15 minutes that you would have had for dinner, we're taking that time as a minimum. So we're asking you to spend more than that. But if you're not able to do more than that as a minimum, you've bought yourself all of the time that you would have spent eating to spend spiritually eating, to spend in spiritual exercise. So we want to help you to do that in those things. I don't know if you've ever spent time in the depths of your being, out of the shallows of distraction that the world is designed to keep us in, through the midlands of care and burden, excuse me, and into the depths of your being where God wants us to linger. Fasting highlights where we are dwelling. Most of us dwell in the shallows of our being. We be constantly distracted by the cares of the world. We constantly move from this thing, that thing, this thing. We live in a state of constant distraction. Most of us live in that place. Some of us descend into the midlands of our being. Into the midlands is where our cares and worries live. And what happens is we come out of distraction, and the first thing we encounter is cares and worries. And so as you go to sleep at night, you come out of distraction, and where do you shift into? The midlands. And so why, when you go to sleep at night, are you thinking about the cares and worries of the world? Because you're in the midlands of your being. And most of us only ever spend spiritual time in distraction or cares and worries. We only ever spend time there. What fasting invites us to do, and what we're inviting you to do, is to spend time lingering in the depths of your being, past the distractions, past the cares and worries, in the depths of your being where you can have communion, intimacy with God, with your Creator. And we want to help you to do that through some intentional practices. Is that all right? So fasting isn't only an abstinence, it's a whole being practice. Fasting isn't only stop eating and then do everything else that you would normally do. Fasting is something that I do with my whole being. That's why I don't only stop eating food. It's other indulgences of my flesh also. It's a way for Jesus to grow you and speak to you, not only through your intellect, not through reading a book, not through listening to a song or a podcast, but it's a way for Jesus to grow you and speak to you through your stomach. Fasting is of a very little benefit if it's goal-orientated. So if your goal is to fast for 3 days, that's fine. It will be of benefit, but very little benefit. If your fast is formation-orientated, who is this helping me to become? It will be worth far more to you. So again, very practical. Rest well. Go to sleep early. The first day or two of the fast are the most challenging. Persevere through this period. Consult a doctor again if you are unsure of any headaches or body reactions. But this is a time, you will very seldom hear this said by a pastor from the front. This is a time to push yourself. This is a time to go beyond what you are naturally comfortable with. Because we are so accustomed to living and giving our bodies what we want. We want and we take, and we want and we take, and we give and we give and we give. When we cut that off, it becomes very uncomfortable for us. And so this is a time to push yourself past what you are comfortable with. Again, within reason. What you'll find is as you begin to fast leisure media, it will be easier for you to go to bed earlier. As you have abstained from caffeine and most refined sugars and drinks, and as you've drunk a lot of water, you'll also find that you'll fall asleep easier. So you will be able to go to bed earlier, and you will be able to fall asleep easier. Those two things together equal better rest. Don't use that extra time that you've bought yourself to catch up on work that you could do tomorrow. No, lean into it, rest well, because this is we don't want to dwell in the distraction and the cares and worries. We want to give ourselves time to dwell in the depths. So let's look at three quick outcomes of fasting, and then we're done. First of all, fasting will give us integrity. Our faith, my faith, is both personal and it's public. To have integrity means that I'm able to draw a straight line between my personal faith and my public faith. Who I am in private and in my personal faith is the same man that I am in my public faith. Remember, Jesus says, your Father who sees what is done in secret will reward you. When there's a discrepancy, not a straight line between my personal faith and my public faith, I'm on a shortcut to burnout, spiritual disillusionment. I'm done with this. It doesn't work. No, because you're trying to be something in public that you're not in private. So many people want their faith to have a public impact, but because there's little to no impact in their personal faith, our public faith also has little to no impact. Friends, we lack power and authority in our public faith because of two things: what we do and what we don't do in our personal faith. An outcome of fasting is that there's a greater alignment, there's an integrity between my personal faith and my public faith. And so to ask our overarching question, who am I becoming by the things that I'm doing? Another way, who am I publicly becoming by the things that I'm privately doing? But fasting is one of the ways that you can begin to remedy that, who you are publicly becoming by what you are privately doing. The second outcome of fasting is that you will be kept from false messiahs. When Jesus is speaking in Matthew 24 of the end times, he says a few things, and then he says, many false messiahs will arrive and they will deceive many. He's not saying that many people will come claiming to be the Son of God. We have a couple of those, but most of them are whack jobs and they're quite easy to spot, right? That's not what he's saying. He's saying that the word Messiah means a promised one or a savior. He says, many will come in the end times promising to save you, and they will deceive many. Friends, who or what is promising to save you? Where all of us have a desire to return to Eden. All of us have a desire to return to perfection, to return to peace and tranquility. And the world offers us the means to get there. If you watch this, if you eat that, if you do this, if you take part in this, if you can get this right, if you can earn this much money and do that, then your life will be in Eden. Actually, that's a false messiah. It's promising you something. It can save you, and it can't. Fasting saves us. It keeps us from false messiahs. Who or what is promising you what only Jesus can deliver? Who or what is promising you peace, fulfillment, comfort, connection, attachment, joy, purpose? When we seek these things through self-medication, self-indulgence, we are trying to enter the kingdom without going through the king. And so we become afraid and anxious, and our attention is drawn to our anxiety and our fears and away from Jesus. Friends, don't unite with this. One of the other things that Jesus says in Matthew 24 is that there will also be desolation. Desolation is a lack of life. Desolation is barrenness and dryness. Desolation is a desert instead of an Eden. False messiahs promise you an Eden but give you a desert. Not a desert. Remember our accent? Not a desert, a desert. Symptoms of desolation include dullness of heart, poverty of spirit, barrenness of soul, disappointment, constant disappointment, and eventually becomes disillusionment. Neither hope nor joy come easily. Worst of all comes a complete blankness in your life with God. I only feel disappointments and disillusionments, and eventually I actually just feel nothing spiritually. Desolation. We end up in a place of desolation because we have followed a false messiah, something that has promised us to save us, to deliver us, promised us something that it cannot deliver. Fasting keeps us from false messiahs. The opposite of desolation is attachment and nurturing. What are you attaching to? Another way of saying that is, what have you given union to? Who or what have you given yourself to union with? Fasting breaks unions that we've created with the things of this world, and it nurtures a union with God. It rescues us out of the desolation of the shallows and cares, and it nurtures a deep union and connection with God. Matthew chapter 24, I end with this in verse 16. Says this. Then Jesus went to work on his disciples. He said, anyone who intends to come with me has to let me lead. You're not in the driver's seat. I am. Don't run from suffering. Embrace it. Follow me and I'll show you how. Self-help is no help at all. Self-sacrifice is the way. It's my way to finding yourself, your true self. What kind of deal is it to get everything you want, but to lose yourself? What could you ever trade your soul for? Friends, I want to invite you this morning to give consideration. I'm not trying to convince you to fast with us. The Christian faith is always an opt-in. Jesus always offers us an invitation. Jesus says, if you want to have my kingdom, you first have to have me. Fasting is an invitation to buffet your body as waves buffet the coastline, and over time they begin to shape what the coastline looks like. So as you buffet your body, it will begin to shape what it looks like. And yeah, I'm actually talking physically too, because holiness looks good on you. Sin makes you look ugly. I've seen it. Holiness looks good on you, and sin makes you look ugly. It's the truth. I'm not saying that Christians are the best looking people in the world, necessarily, but when you're living a life of surrender, a life of self-denial, and not a life of self-indulgence, you'll see it. You'll see it in your eyes. You'll see it in your countenance, how you present yourself to others. You'll see it in your deep inner peace. holiness looks good on everyone. Can you stand with me, please?